good evening and welcome to the NFL Draft. Tonight, we officially welcome the next generation of players. So if you're ready, are you ready? Let's get it started. The NFL Draft is officially open.
Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I am Trevor Sycamore. With me is Benjamin Solak. On a beautiful Monday morning of the podcast, and no mock draft this morning, Ben. The reason was because, well, I think we've had our fill of mock drafting, and now it's actually time to talk about everything that happened in the 2021 NFL Draft. We gave you a show recapping our thoughts on day one, but days two and three happened on Friday and Saturday. A lot of picks were made, a lot of things we liked, some things we didn't. And so what we're going to do here on this Monday podcast is we're going to recap all that stuff. We're going to go a little bit more into the details throughout this week with those picks that we liked and what we didn't. And then over the next couple of weeks, get into some team-specific hauls, go into really the details of all of the players they selected, how much better we think teams got, and how well we think they navigated the draft. Before we get too far, got to remind people that this episode is brought to you by BuiltBar.com. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCK15, get yourself 15% off on the best tasting protein bars on the planet. Ben, I know that you were moving around all weekend, Saturday, Sunday, as the draft was coming to a close and us getting home, but you energized enough for this podcast here, my friend?
I'll get there. Man, yeah, no, it's been a long weekend. It's been a good weekend, a productive weekend. Was a great time at Brink with Brinks and doing that studio work and everything. We got some great clips out of it and some great analysis. That was a ton of fun.
You were killing it in that green screen room, man. You looked like you were having a blast in there.
No idea who decided that was a good idea. But yes, put Ben in a virtual set. He'll behave. Nope. No, I couldn't if I tried.
I think the whole point was that they didn't want you to behave. They wanted you to go full Ben Solak on the show, which you absolutely did.
Yeah, apparently. The legend goes that my folks, when they were watching, my younger brother, Nico, was doing me. Like, he was doing an impersonation of me while I was on there, and it's quite good. So I'm hoping to procure a video of that to share with the people, because my brother Nico is funny and a very good impersonator. I was basically a whole meme. I would watch back that show and be like, oh my goodness, what was I thinking? I'm an idiot. But it was, and then I came back with day three, I did the exact same thing. It was a lot of fun. No, I think we in general had a lot of fun doing that show and put out some really quality stuff there. With that said, I now had to go back and like actually look at the results for round two and round three.
Yeah, it is funny how that works.
Because I completely don't, you know what I mean? I was like, oh, like Liam, I can work through the Miami Dolphins. That's perfect.
Right.
And I talked about that pick, but I don't remember it happening. You know what I mean? You're just constantly going at such a fast pace.
It's like draft weekend is just, especially when you're working it does become such a blur. You know, like we're not getting a lot of sleep on draft weekend. Draft week in general, I mean, we're just trying to give you guys as much content as possible, trying to cover it before and during the draft as much as we possibly can. And like you said, I feel like I'm very excited for all the podcast episodes that we have this week, because it's truly going to allow me to sit down and digest not just the individual picks, but the full draft hauls and everything that went on really after day one, because we talk about day one and we talk about the singular picks that a lot of these teams make at the top, but draft seven rounds long, man. I mean, we find these draft steals and these guys who make a difference, whether it's on offense, defense, special teams, whatever. We're going to get into all of that stuff. But let's start at the top of day two, because, you know, we ended our last podcast talking about how many players there were still available, still to be selected. You know, we talked about Christian Barmore and Tevin Jenkins and, like you mentioned, Liam Eikenberg, Trayvon Merrick, Owusu-Koramoah, all of these players that were still on the board. Now we actually know where they're going to call home. So let's start at the top. Let's talk about a couple of those names that really stood out there. When you look at the beginning, the first half of day two, what are some names and some teams that really stand out to you from what happened?
I'm really surprised Trayvon Merrick was safety three. And I understand he, Javon Hall, and Richie Grant all went within like seven picks of each other. So it's not like it's like too much of a difference. It's not like it was that crazy, but still, he ends up going 42, 43 to the Las Vegas Raiders. I thought he should have gone about 20 picks higher. That Raiders draft ended up a weird one, but we're not doing team ones yet. I thought Merrick was their best pick, and I think that Merrick's going to clearly be able to start for him. But Atlanta brings in Richie Grant at pick 40, and then Miami, who, you know, you look at the Dolphins depth chart and you say to yourself, okay, what do they definitely not need? It's like, all right, the secondary is probably fine. You know what I mean? And specifically at safety, you have Bobby McCain and Eric Rowe as your starter, and you just drafted Brandon Jones in the third round last year to be a potential Bobby McCain successor, and he played quite well after that pick. You're probably good. It's not like you need a nickel player. It's not like you need a third safety in your nickel sets because you drafted Noah Igbinoghi in the first round last year to play the nickel for you. So you signed Justin Coleman. You're good. And they were like, yeah, we really love safeties. We're drafting Javon Holland in the second round. So that was a surprise pick in and of itself.
Right.
But I couldn't believe that Merrick was a third safety off the board. To me, this class was very clearly Merrick is the top safety with a significant chasm between him and safety two. And so I was surprised. I'm glad he got there in the top 50. If he had fallen any further, I would have been like, there's got to be something going on here.
Yeah.
But the league clearly viewed safety as a much closer top of the class than I did. And I, even for previous safeties who went round one, and we saw Darnell Savage go round one a couple years ago. Last year, we didn't really have a top safety, but like Xavier McKinney was the first off the board right around this range. I thought Merrick was a better prospect than McKinney comfortably. And right. I thought Merrick was a better prospect than Savage. And so to me, surprised to see him fall as far as he did. I think he's going to be a really good pro for a long time. Yeah. Interested to see if he can endure what's likely to be some disarray in Las Vegas this year. Because obviously that first year can really set you on a certain track. And
right.
As much as I like him.
Right.
If, you know, Gus Bradley? Yeah, Gus Bradley don't know how to use him. Or if the Raiders, like, you know, just fail to have a successful team in general, that puts you behind as a player.
Man, we like Merrick a lot. You know, I think both of us were on the same page that we felt like he had the highest impact as safety one in this class. We really liked his tape. Felt like we were the most comfortable with his single high ability, giving you that ceiling to play one of the safety positions at the highest level, give you something that's very, very valuable to a defense on the back end. But throughout the process, it seemed like the NFL was not nearly as high on Trayvon Merrick. And I wonder if overall athleticism was why, because you pop on Merrick's tape and it's not like it's clear and evident, like you just see the athleticism every single play and it pops out at you and all that kinds of stuff. But I think that he's adequate. Like, you think he's fine. I think he brings you the athleticism that you would certainly want, that is required to play a single high cover one free safety role. And so even though it wasn't like glaring, like overwhelming that he was such this explosive athlete on the back end, I thought that he showed the ability to do it, and he was dealing with a back injury right when he was going through his pro day. So I wonder if
he ran low 4.5s at over 200 pounds.
Right. No, you know what I mean? I'm yeah. with you. It's just like, I that's the only reason why I think that he had to have been safety three when it was all said and done, because of that. It just seemed like you and me and a lot of other draft analysts that we really respect were pushing Trayvon Merrick, saying, hey, look at this guy's versatility. Watch the tape. He's such a great communicator. He understands things. He anticipates well, and he knows how to get from point A to point B when he is able to see the play unfold. And that, to me, is a valuable safety. And I thought that Merrick did that comfortably better than Richie Grant and Javon Holland and some of the other safeties that were drafted in this class. But the closer we got, it just seemed like, and correct me if I'm wrong, it just seemed like it was like, oh, but Richie Grant, the NFL loves Richie Grant. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess. And then, you know, there's some late love that we heard for Javon Holland, and both of those guys end up going ahead of him. So, you know, this isn't a full safety podcast, but I do agree with you. Those guys going early and Merrick being the third one off the board was pretty surprising to me.
Yeah, so Merrick being that late off the board surprised me. The other player that I thought came later, far later off the board than I expected, and again, maybe this is like an NFL hype thing, but for Samuel Cosmi to be drafted after Jackson Carmen and Walker Little is extremely surprising.
That's like, crazy, right, man.
Like, while we didn't hear any we didn't hear any like late love for Samuel Cosmi, which we did for Dylan Raidens, who went two picks later. So like, we can put him in here as well. But obviously,
how did Jackson Carmen and Walker Little go before those two dudes?
Right.
What are we watching? What?
And like Raiden's, we heard late love on him. So like that was weird. Like he was rumored edge first round, whatever. Even though Cosby, we didn't get like the late hype on him. NFL teams were hyping him up when he was like a freshman, when he was a sophomore. You know, like, oh, this guy's athleticism is going to be great. Like, he's a good developmental player. And I don't think you could argue that any Texas players, especially on offense, have really developed that much in the Texas program. So it's not like other guys were getting a lot better there and he wasn't. So I like, okay, he's round two. I get it. You know what I mean? If that was a fringe player. And you look at, like, Tevin Jenkins and his fall, and it's a little bit surprising to see him in round two. But, like, I thought Liam Eichenberg would be a round two player because of that arm length. I would have guessed that Cosme, you know, you look at that end of the first round, you see Alex Leatherwood go at 17. Christian Darrisaw, with the late concerns about the surgery, go at 23. Like, all right, there were only two tackles in this class go in that back 16 picks. Right when they had four total tackles go, and then Elijah Vera Tucker was the fifth. It was a lighter class on offensive tackles and offensive linemen in the first round than you would have guessed. When we got to round two, I would have guessed the priority for the league was Samuel Cosme. But Tevin Jenkins, Landon Dickerson, Liam Eichenberg, and then, yes, the big surprise is Walker Little, who hasn't been healthy since 2018, and Jackson Carmen, who simply hasn't played good football. And I'm not even trying to joke on Walker Little. He hasn't been healthy since 2018. So I found it very surprising. I remember when we were talking about Washington, who ended up taking Cosme here at 51, I remember saying, you know, we were going through that process. I was like, I really don't think they think their left side of the line is as big of a need as we do. But once Samuel Cosme falls in your lap at 51, if your left side of your line is even slightly in need, you're like, yeah, okay, we'll take him. You know what I mean? That's no problem. And so Cosme at 51 surprised me. And then, of course, the big surprise for everybody, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah making it all the way down to 52.
52, dude. Just, how did this dude get out of the top 50?
People don't know how to use him.
And you and I have chatted about this before, and we chatted about it on the last podcast. I get it. I totally get it. I am just floored that the NFL did not take him until 52, giving the rave reviews that people spoke on him about with him as a football player. And, oh, man, he goes to Cleveland Browns. It's one of the best spots I feel like he could possibly go to. And so it may not be a ton of playing time right away. They might have to mix him in with some of those other guys because that roster is stacked. But I love the landing spot there for Owusu-Koramoah. I thought that was great. I love Asante Samuel going to the Chargers at 47. I really great thought fit. That when it came to picks 1 and 2 for certain teams, and when I say that, I mean, let's exclude the teams that had multiple first-round picks. The Chargers getting Rashawn Slater and then Asante Samuel Jr. is about as good as a 1-2 you could get. I think the only other team that could have rivaled that, if you ask me, is the Chicago Bears doing a double trade up to go get Justin Fields and then Tevin Jenkins, right? But you got to move a lot of draft capital to get that going.
I had the, like, I will die for you Tom Telesco tweet readied up after Slater Samuel. And then third round was Josh Palmer, Trey McKinney. And fourth round was Chris Rumpf. And I was like, we were so close.
It fell off so hard. I just did my draft grade article.
Extremely odd.
And it was like, you loved those first two picks for the Chargers. And then the other guys that they drafted, I think are fine, but you're really betting on those players drafting them where you did. I just think it was, I thought it was a little bit of a reach for each one of those players that they drafted after Asante Samuel and Rashawn Slater.
Yeah, no, that, and again, I know we're not supposed to be doing teams because we're doing teams later.
Well, we're gonna do a little bit of it, of course, because it goes right into the full haul and everything. But I do want to ask you about this quarterback run, because you were somebody who studied these quarterbacks a lot, even the ones outside of the top five in this class, with your contextualized quarterbacking exercise. We weren't exactly sure when the second run on quarterbacks were going to happen. It happened at the very back end of the second round. Kyle Trask goes 64 to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Then Andre Sisco goes to the Jaguars. And then boom, boom, Kellen Mond to the Vikings. Davis Mills to the Houston Texans. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on the QB run and also about a little bit about these three guys. Were they worth these selections here? Very back end of the second round, early third round.
Okay, firstly, screw you, NFL, for drafting three quarterbacks and four picks. I was not prepared for that on the live stream. I was like, all right, I'm going to have time to prepare for each one of these quarterback picks. And then the NFL was like, you absolutely will not. I felt like the CNN politics guy, the board, Like, I didn't even know what was going to come up next. What, just, is it Steve or whatever?
Yeah, I don't know his last name, but yes.
Yeah, Steve, it's like Steve Kornacki, I think it is. I might be saying that wrong. I apologize. Anyway, Kyle Trask at 64 to the Bucks, Mond at 66 to the Vikings, Davis Mills at 67 to the Texans. Before the draft, I would have told you the only player I was kind of interested in taking as a developmental quarterback at that price, round two, round three, would have been Kellen Mond. After the selections, the only quarterback I'm kind of interested in here as maybe a developmental option for their team is Kellen Mond. I'm with you in that I do not understand what Trask brings to Tampa and what he brings to Bruce Arians' offense.
I don't get it. He's just not an Arians quarterback at all.
Like, the only thing that I've got on that is if, like, Arians went to Byron Leftwich and was like, hey, who do you want? Because I'm probably not going to coach much longer.
I think,
you know what I mean?
I think Jason liked him. I think Jason liked the general manager for the Buccaneers. I think that he really liked Kyle Trask. And it's not like he went behind Bruce Arians back to draft Kyle Trask. I'm sure they talked about it plenty, but if we're talking about that room, I don't see anyone on Arians' staff, Arians especially, pounding the table for Kyle Trask. I really do think that was a sole Jason-like kind of a pick. Because there's nothing in Arians' track record over anything that you would call recent history that tells you that the style of player that Kyle Trask is what he's looking for in a quarterback, even a backup quarterback, right? Because we also heard after the draft that the Buccaneers, they brought back Ryan Griffin. Okay, well, Ryan Griffin hasn't really played a lot, but it seems like they're also going to bring back Blaine Gabbert. Kyle Trask chose number two to wear for the Buccaneers, and I think he didn't choose 11 because they're working out a deal to bring Blaine Gabbert back, because that's what makes the most sense. And that's why the Trask pick, I don't get it. Like, I think it's going to be a waste unless he comes in after Brady's done in 2 years and just lights the world on fire, which I guess, I don't see it, but I guess, then I feel like it was a waste of a pick. I didn't think this was the year to draft quarterback for the Buccaneers, but yeah, that was a strange one for me. I'm much more in on Kellen Mond, like you said.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Like, so I don't understand Trask to the Bucks. Mills to the Texans, I get it in the sense of, like, our quarterback situation is not good.
Not great. Warden,
yeah, the Deshaun Watson, like, I as many ESPN analysts said, I'm not sure Deshaun ever takes a snap again for the Texans. So you got to do something here, and Mills certainly is something. I just don't think Mills can be a very good pro. Mond to the Vikings, I don't even super love from a fit perspective, because I like Mond better as a quick game passer than I liked him as a deep passer, which I didn't realize. It seems the consensus is that he's a better deep ball passer than a quick game passer. I learned after the pick, and people started communicating what they liked about it and what they didn't. So maybe I'm just an idiot, but that's where I landed on Mond. And so for me in Minnesota, where it's going to be like, I'm not going to have a high volume of throws and they're all going to be down the field, I don't love that, but I think he does have the arm to pull it off. I'm just not sure he's a consistent enough thrower to pull it off. Mond to the Vikings. That's a little bit fun. We can do another year of Kirk Cousins, will they, won't they? Super great time. But I don't think Mond's going to be enough in that system to challenge Kirk Cousins.
No, I don't
think
so.
My main takeaway from the run of quarterbacks is that I hope Andre Sisco ends up really freaking good in Jacksonville. Because how funny will it be to have Kyle Trask 64, Mond 66, Mills 67, and just Sisco at 65 be the best pick of that group? Quarterbacks are overvalued. Got to take safeties round three, baby.
Well, I mean, the Jags weren't going to take a quarterback, obviously. You know, right. They weren't gonna do Washington, right? That drafted RG3 and then Kirk Cousins, right? That was the same draft, right? They weren't gonna pull Washington on us and probably draft two quarterbacks.
And then RG3 in post draft analysis said he thought Mond is gonna beat out Kirk for the starting job. And I always love it whenever RG3 says anything about Kirk, because it's like
full circle, baby. Salty.
It's all right. You're a little pissed off. It's fine. You want to know what the best actual snapshot of picks is in day two?
Yeah, let me hear it.
56, Seattle Seahawks, Dwayne Eskridge. Oh, 57, Los Angeles Rams, Tutu Atwell. 58, Chiefs, Nick Bolton. Don't forget about that. It doesn't matter. 59, Panthers, Terrace Marshall. Imagine if Marshall's healthy. Oh, he's so much better than Dwayne Eskridge and Tutu Atwell.
Okay, look. Okay. I caped for Dwayne Eskridge when we ran through wide receivers. I like Dwayne Eskridge. I think that he is good. And you know what? I know we're not doing a full breakdown of teams, but the Seahawks only had 3 picks, so it's not like we had a lot to choose from. But them going Eskridge at the top really worried me. But then when I sit back and I go, okay, Eskridge in the second round pick, Trey Brown with their 4th round pick, Stone Forsythe somehow with their 6th round pick. All right, cool. That was actually a nice draft haul there. But it was so hilarious, like you just brought up, for it to go Dwayne Eskridge and then Tutu Atwell. Ben,
tell me,
how did this pick get through?
Do you think,
unless somebody just went totally rogue and threw this pick in there without consulting anybody else, this pick had to get approved by multiple people: head coach Les Snead, director of college scouting, probably the wide receiver coach as well. Tutu Atwell weighed in at 149 pounds. We're sitting here having all these conversations.
He posted a video of him weighing 160.
Oh, okay,
so.
Sure, great. Yeah, he ate a full pizza and drank a lot of water for a week straight, and then he comes up at 160. Great. Proud of you for getting
dedication
up to 160, which is, again, something that we are going to criticize. We're sitting here looking at Devontae Smith and his 165-pound frame going, wow, is it going to hold up in the NFL? And you're picking Tutu Atwell almost another round after that. Middle of the second round. This is your first selection. The Los Angeles Rams had big-time needs on both sides of the football, especially in the trenches. And you picked a 149-pound wide receiver at the deepest position group on your team. How did this pick even happen? I'm surprised the people at NFL headquarters, wherever they are, whoever's handling that, didn't get that name over the wire and just like message them back, be like, hold up, I'm gonna help you guys out here. Normally it's final when you send me the name for the pick.
Right.
I'm just gonna give you a little friendly, are you freaking sure you want to do this? That's the level that we're talking about with this pick. This is the most baffling selection of the entire draft right here. That Tutu Atwell went 57 overall to a team that was picking for the first time in the draft. This was not a luxury pick. I'm flabbergasted, as you guys could tell.
I want to be careful because the last time we did a series of post-draft shows, i.e. last year, I ripped the Jordan Brooks pick to shreds. And then the good people, Maddie Brown and Griff, see Mike Spin Move on Twitter, watched Jordan Brooks, and they watched his 2018 film as well as 2019 film, and we're like, he was actually really good in coverage in 2018. And then I watched it, and I was like, oh no, there's a chance I'm an idiot. And then Brooks played decently well in sub package snaps for the Seahawks, and I'm like, oh,
right,
more and more like I am an idiot.
Right, but Atwell, I think that both you and I would say, like, he's extremely explosive. He's very athletic. He's fun. He is a jolt of energy. He is a spark plug for an offense. Like, these are all things that Tutu Atwell is, but how much are you going to get a 150-pound wide receiver involved in the offense that already diversifies a lot of their targets? Now, okay, Matthew Stafford's a quarterback, so things could definitely change for them, but even if Tutu Atwell is everything that you probably think that he could be for you, I don't think that that's what you want over an upgrade on the offensive line or an upgraded edge. You know, that is the biggest part for me. Not even that Tutu isn't an exciting player, although I still think that he would be overdrafted even for what he is. It's the fact that Los Angeles, I think, has needs on both trenches that they just threw the wayside to pick a super small wide receiver. I don't know, man. I'm out on it. If I get Ben Solak, Jordan Brooks on it, so be it.
My running theory is Les Snead wasn't able to be in the massive draft complex, right? Because he tested positive for COVID-19. I believe he had a negative test afterwards. I hope that whatever happens, Les is fine. I hope that he's healthy. But I just think somebody called him before their pick and was like, Les, how you doing? He was like, I'm doing well. And they were like, Tutu Atwell? And he was like, wait, no. And then Tutu Atwell was in. That's my running theory. it works.
It's doing well. Listen, man.
Tutu Atwell? Yeah,
it's got to be something. Got to be something outside the box.
That series is great because, okay, Dwayne Eskridge is a jet sweep pick. Tutu Atwell is a jet sweep pick. Terrace Marshall is a I might be the starting X next year pick. So Marshall's got a ludicrously high ceiling in Carolina, especially because he's with his old OC, which is a lot of fun.
Right. No, I think that there's a lot of fun wide receiver setups with the teams that they went to. We'll talk about that in a sec, but I gotta talk to draft fans here. Nugenix is the number one selling free testosterone booster at GNC and is offering a complimentary bottle to all football fans in America. To get your complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total T, text DRAFT to 231-231. This unique man-boosting formula is powered by Testofen, which helps boost free testosterone and total testosterone levels to increase energy and lean muscle mass. Plus, text now and they'll be able to include a bottle of Nugenix Thermo, their most powerful fat incinerator ever, with key ingredients to help get you back in shape. Absolutely free. Text DRAFT to 231-231. That's DRAFT to 231-231. Message and data rates may apply. Also, y'all already know this, but I'm going to say it again for those who don't. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball is in full swing, and you can get in on the action over at BetOnline. Get all the latest news, odds, info for all your sporting needs, including, of course, baseball and NBA, NHL, even UFC and MMA action as well. Don't sit on the sideline anymore. This is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their playoff runs and really get into the regular season. Head to the website or use your mobile device today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit using the promo code LOCKEDON. That's all caps, one word, locked on. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right, getting more towards the end of round two into round three. And Ben, you mentioned wide receiver there, but there's another position that I got to talk about there because there's a couple of names that I think are worth discussing, where they went both to the teams and in order of their position. Okay, you ready for it?
Yes.
It's tight end. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Kyle Pitts, obviously, tight end one, goes very high. Goes as high as any tight end ever has before in the NFL draft. Goes number four to the Atlanta Falcons. Next tight end off the board, the name is what we figured it would be. It's Pat Freiermuth. But he goes to the Pittsburgh Steelers in the second round, right after they picked a running back in the first round. That was very puzzling to me.
I've said it once, I've said it 100 times. If you need starting left tackles and right tackles, just draft the tight end.
Yeah, right, of course. Yeah,
you move him around. He's the last guy in the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
Basically a tackle.
Yeah. No, that's a good point.
Especially when he's a pass protector like Pat Freiermuth. None of this is real. I want to emphasize that none of this is real, including the pass protecting about Pat Freiermuth comment.
Tommy Tremble goes as the fourth tight end off the draft in the draft, which was cool. Hunter Long went before him, which was kind of a surprise. Went to the Miami Dolphins. But the other big point that I wanted to mention before I turned it over to you, Brevin Jordan was tight end nine. Yeah. Tight end nine, Ben. We had Trey McKitty, John Bates, Kylan Granson, Luke Farrell. Luke Farrell went ahead of Brevin Jordan.
Hey, big Luke Farrell guy over here.
Look, we like Luke Farrell for what he is. He's a blocking tight end. He's a big package tight end.
Yeah, what he is an Urban Meyer recruit.
That's also very, very true. So, man,
I wish Urban got to draft Kadarius Toney, by the way. That quote that came out, oh, because we would have been so vindicated.
I want you to know how mad I would have been. Because in my final mock draft, I didn't have the Jaguars selecting Kadarius Toney. I went back on my own word and I said, you know what? If Owusu-Koramoah is going to be there, it makes too much sense. They get more speed on defense. I think the Jaguars would really love him. And so I had them going Owusu-Koramoah. I had Kadarius Toney to the Jaguars like in every single mock draft for the last 2 weeks leading up to the draft. And lo and behold, they would have done it, Ben. They would have done it. And if I would have, if I would have actually had that, and then Dave Gettleman sniped him from selecting that, and me getting an extra 2 points in the mock draft competition, would have been steaming on the timeline.
As it is, number five in the world mock draft, Trevor Sigma.
Hello, thank you.
No worries. It's relaxed. It's casual.
All right. So this tight end group, it was all over the place, man. And what do you make of Brevin Jordan being tight end nine? Well, I figured he might have been a little bit overrated, but tight end nine? Fifth round?
The whole evaluation was predicated on high caliber athleticism. And then he didn't have high caliber athleticism. I still think, like, I like the pick in general. I can't remember. Did they trade up for him here or no?
No, Houston no, just took him in the fifth round.
It's their third spot. So, yeah, this is the appropriate spot. But I still like the pick because I think Houston's in a spot where you just draft guys you think are good players. And if they can stick and they figure out for you, that's great. You know what I mean? Like, that roster is so decimated at this point that Brevin at that time is value. But I get why he fell. I did. Like, I like him as a guy. I think that he's got a chance to be a really good pro because I think he's got a great knack for run after the catch. And you just can't teach that, and it doesn't really show up in testing. I think he has a good ability there. But I do get why he fell because, like I said, that whole athleticism predicated on – the whole eval is predicated on athleticism, and he doesn't have it. With that said, yeah, I'm drafting him above Zach Davidson and Noah Gray, which I hope Zach Davidson punts for Minnesota would be awesome. I do like John Bates. We've talked about him before out of Boise State. He was one of the players yes. that I was surprised at when I watched his film. Happy to see him go in the fourth round despite the health concerns. And Washington is a team. He went to Washington who has a tight end two role open behind Logan Thomas. And so I am fully ready to just all aboard the John Bates train. I'm happy with that pairing. Tremble went to Carolina as well, right?
Yes. Yep. Tommy Tremble went to Carolina. Yeah.
Carolina, man.
Insane draft class. I don't want to, you know, give anything away on tomorrow's episode of our favorite hauls, but let me just tell you, Carolina's going to be at the top of mine.
You love to see it.
You really do. What do you think about Baron Browning going in round three? There are a couple players I was just very, very shocked to see go round three. Elijah Molden was round three. Okay. I guess I get that. If NFL probably wasn't as high on him because he didn't test as well. He's more of a nickel guy. But we got Elijah Molden. We got Ifeatu Melifonwu going to the Detroit Lions in the third round. Baron Browning at the end of the third round. I feel like there were a lot of good players, just like we talked about, making it into day two, the beginning of day two, that we knew were going to get picked early. Those names right there really stand out to me as some of those final picks of round three.
I thought that Baron Browning should have been a third rounder, and I thought it was appropriate that it was. I know the scouting staff at TDN really loved him, and they obviously do quality work, and they go deeper on these guys than I do. I didn't see it with Baron Browning as a round three player, as a more than round three player. Absolutely saw it with Elijah Molden, went nuts about the Elijah Molden pick in my little green screen spot. Think it's going to be great there. Extremely pissed that I did not. Before the draft pick, he'd be really good for Tennessee because he is really good for Tennessee.
Oh, this
for
is, the second it was up that he was going to Tennessee, I was like, this is perfect.
Him, Desmond King, like, it just makes a lot of sense. So I like that a fair bit. The Anthony Schwartz draft pick is very interesting to me. Not because of any sort of, like, Cleveland, you know, Odell Beckham Jr. replacement thing, which, like, everybody kind of talks about how long Odell is for there and so on and so forth. I know Schwartz had his fans. And I know that you cannot teach 10 flat 100-meter dash speed, which is legitimately what this guy has, right? Like, he's an unbelievable athlete. He does have, like, you know, not great career production. And I'm it's a very big swing in the top 100, especially in a deep wide receiver class. We saw your two duet wasn't Dwayne Esker just go around previous, and so they didn't take the pick in round two, which I liked, but I was surprised to see Schwartz have his name called that early in the draft. And I loved Cleveland's haul in general. I think Andrew Berry is a very good evaluator and very good decision maker on draft day. The one pick for me that I'm a little bit like, oh, is the Anthony Schwartz pick, where I think that you've got, he has to come in and be wide receiver three if he's going to get picked on day two. And especially in that offense, he's got to beat out Rashard Higgins and Donovan Peoples-Jones. I think you like Rashard Higgins for what he did last year, and I think Donovan Peoples-Jones impressed as a rookie. And well, so it's not like they've got that spot wide open.
I don't know if it's just like, because wide receiver three could mean different things for different teams, and especially when you look at a guy like Anthony Schwartz. He was a puzzling evaluation for me, even from some of the things that I knew with the Auburn staff, where I don't know why they didn't get this dude the ball. Like, they just really didn't, you know, they talk. And I hear you there, but maybe that's just what it is. Maybe it was just Bo Nix could not get him the ball down the field because it seemed like they were doing really gimmicky stuff with Anthony Schwartz. I feel like even to his final games as an Auburn Tiger, and you know, he was touted as somebody who could be much more, and week after week we just did not see that. He was clearly more of just a decoy and a threat than he was an actual offensive weapon. And so maybe it's more streamlined things in Cleveland, and maybe it's not like a quote-unquote full-time wide receiver three role, but could have a big impact. You know, this is a team that the roster is very, very stacked around him. You're looking for X factors. You're looking for those players that can really put you over the top, and maybe Schwartz is that guy. Maybe it's not as much of a volume thing as it is an impact thing, and you hope his best days are ahead of him because, yeah, he's that speed is fun. That speed's fun to watch. When he actually got into open space and when he was able to show it in college football, that was great. I'm looking at a run of picks here, been in the fourth round, that I was reminded of that just took me like to the mountaintop and then like to the valley. It's a run of three selections. It's pick 131, 132, and 133. Tylan Wallace goes to the Baltimore Ravens, and I lost it just because that is
I'm so proud of the Ravens. I'm so proud of the Ravens for being like, hey, maybe we stop just drafting athletes at wide receiver and pretending it'll work and start drafting guys with actual route running talent. I cannot wait.
I was to the moon about that. One pick later, Tommy Togiai goes to the Cleveland Browns, and I am again pumped. Just jazzed about it. Again, we talked about it. This Cleveland Browns team is so good, and you get to throw Tommy Togiai in that interior defensive line rotation. Let's go, baby. And then, Ben, at pick one...
I'm not looking, so I literally do not remember who this
at is. At pick 133, Sean Payton in the New Orleans Saints draft Book in the fourth round. I was... You ever see that Chris Farley gif where he's like kind of like smiling off and then like he just like slowly it just like turns to a frown and then he just starts looking around everywhere? That was literally me with these three picks. I was smiling, I was squinting, I was happy, I couldn't wait to see who was next, and then it was Ian Book, who, before the draft, the over-under on Ian Book of where he was going to get selected was 207. He goes 133.
So close. Very, he goes 133. Nearly there, just two rounds away. It's close. I almost had it.
The Raiders and the Saints are two teams that I never know what they're doing. I never understand what they're doing on draft night, but they're drastically different. Because for the Saints, it works out. And for the Raiders, it often does not. And so that's just kind of a little bit recently. Both of those teams and both of those front offices and their scouting staffs have a tendency to make a couple of picks that I just go, how? And for the Saints, it often works out a lot more than it doesn't. And for the Raiders, it does not. So, yeah, I just wanted to shout out those run of three picks there in the fourth round.
The team that, as I looked through it, which I know we're not doing teams, but whatever, just impressed me the most with their day three work was Atlanta and the new front office with Terry Fontenot. Drew Dahlman in the fourth round is a potential starter at center. If you're comfortable with the 290-pounder, which is what he is. Daquan Graham is a Texas athlete who was never used appropriately in Texas, and so is what he is right now. I should say, what he is right now is not what he'll probably be in a couple of years. You got to figure out what to do with his length, what to do with his physicality. Adetokunbo Ogedeji, edge out of Notre Dame, who I've talked about a long time, is one of my favorite base five tax depth player. Avery Williams, that corner, running back, wide receiver, returner, hybrid, Boise player who everybody's excited to get their hands on because nobody knows what he is. And then Frank Darby at Arizona State, who's just a perfectly acceptable blocking wide receiver, possession wide receiver, just depth guy playing on special teams for you. Atlanta killed it on day three. You noticed, though, on day three, a couple of the smart teams, the analytics teams, Eagles and the Browns were the two that I remember. I'm sure other teams did as well. Trading out of day three to go get day three picks next year, which is what we talked about on the show in the week leading up to it. The depth just kind of makes this class not as appealing to have day three picks in. And so Eagles traded with Washington football team, got a fifth round pick next year, for 2 sixth-round picks this year. So basically saying you guys can get 2 swings of the bat in the sixth round this year if we get 1 swing of the bat in round 5 next year, because we just think the players available in round 5 will be so much better than the players available this year in round 6.
Go ahead.
I want to ask you this question.
Yes.
Who, because this is always the case for me in round 7, who are you the happiest to see get drafted? Who do you see get drafted like round 7, maybe even round 6 if you want, and you were just like, yes, like, thank goodness, because I like this guy and he's fun and I wanted him to get drafted and he did and I'm pleased.
All right, so I'm looking at round 7 guys now. The first one that pops out to me is honestly Grant Stewart, the linebacker from Houston. And he got drafted as Mr. Irrelevant to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And it was such a great final selection of the Bucs draft weekend. Because the Buccaneers... The Buccaneers drafted a bunch of guys that I feel like casual draft fans or casual listeners, casual watchers, like, will not know. And I'm here to tell you that, honestly, outside of the Kyle Trask pick, which I don't really get, all of these guys make so much sense for Tampa Bay, including this very last one. Grant Stewart is going to be a special teams stud. This Bucs team just lost their special teams stud in Ryan Smith. He was the do-it-all impact special teams player for them, and they lost him in free agency. So as you are a team that is competing for a championship, going to make another run, you've got to make sure that that third phase of the game is still at a high level. And they lost their biggest impact guy this offseason, and they filled it with one of the players who I think really could help them the most in Grant Stewart. And I remember going through a lot of mock draft exercises, and I would consistently mock Grant Stewart to all kinds of different teams in the seventh round, because seventh round, you're looking at depth players, special teams guys anyways. That's where Grant Stewart shines, you know? And so he's the linebacker out of Houston. I would encourage everybody to go watch him. But a really cool nugget about this, Ben.
Yeah.
They did the Zoom interview with all of the local team reporters for Grant Stewart after he was selected. And he's on Zoom with a creamsicle throwback Buccaneers hat on.
Wait, well, how did he get that?
It's the only hat he owns, Ben.
Oh, that's sick.
It's the only hat he owns. And he's sitting there. He just got drafted by the team as Mr. Irrelevant.
That's really fun. That is sweet.
It's amazing. And the other name that I would just want to shout out, Trey Norwood, the corner from Oklahoma. Yeah. He goes to the Pittsburgh Steelers. I really like this fit. I like him going to Pittsburgh. I think there's a path to play time for him in the next couple of years. He was a standout cornerback a couple of years ago before the injury. I think bounced back really well this past season. You give this guy a year to really get his feet wet, and I think he could be an impact player for you, especially for a team that just lost one of the best nickel corners in the NFL in Mike Hilton. So I really feel like the Trey Norwood selection here in the seventh round stands out to me as one that could be a home run for him.
Love seeing James Wiggins go. Safety out of Cincinnati.
Oh, yeah, you're
right. I had ranked very highly. Torn ACL, torn meniscus, made things really tricky for him, right? And clearly the athleticism returned in terms of testing, but on-field play in 2020 wasn't the exact same as 2019. With that said, Arizona's got a player in Buda Baker, so they're willing to trust smaller, denser safety, right? Like sub-6, weighing over 200 pounds. And besides that, Deontay Thompson, Charles Washington. There's room here, you know what I mean? Which obviously, like, if they're smart, Isaiah Simmons will be on this depth chart and kind of used to serve some of these roles. But there's Jalen Thompson. There's room for safety snaps to be won here. And so I think Wiggins, if healthy, is a legit player for the Cardinals, but I actually just loved to see him drafted. The correct answer, however, was Presley Harvin III. Longtime friend of the show. Presley Harvin III, for those who don't remember, Presley was one of our early Thick Boy of the Weeks in this past season because he was a 250-pound punter out of Georgia Tech who plays the sack.
Punter!
Yes! Do you not remember this?
No, I do. I was just emphasizing it for the people.
Yes, so Presley Harvin III is the absolute man, and he won the Ray Guy, I think it is, which is the punting award. I believe he's the first black punter to ever win it, so that's sick.
Hell yeah.
He's 260 pounds, which is awesome, and he has a hose, and not a foot hose, he's an arm hose, which is awesome. And so they did like a trick play and he threw a touchdown. And like I said, he plays the saxophone or the piano or something. And he's just super cool. And I love him to death. And he got drafted by the Steelers in the seventh round. And I hope that he wins that job. And so Presley Harvin III, friend of the show.
Big friend of the show.
Pittsburgh Steelers. No, but absolutely love to see that.
No, I was just going to say, there's no better way to end this episode, this little overview of days 2 and 3 of the NFL draft to get us ready for this week. Like I said, tomorrow, we're starting to really get more into the details of things. Ben and I are going to bring our favorite selections to you, our favorite picks, our favorite total draft hauls for teams. We're bringing that to the table in tomorrow's episode. Wednesday, we're talking about some teams that we're worried about, not our favorite draft classes, and we're going to go into what worries us about it, how it could actually still work out, but our overall thoughts there. Next week and the week after, we're going to get into division, so true like team-by-team breakdowns of where each one of these guys really fits. We're going to make sure we go through every single draft class that there is over the next 3 weeks. But before we get out of here, I got to remind you guys about BuiltBar.com. I talked about it at the top of the podcast. 18 amazing flavors, and y'all, these are the best protein bars that you're ever going to buy. Low in calorie, low in sugar, high in protein, high in fiber, great for a keto diet, great to eat morning, noon, and night. You can even have it as a meal replacement. We did that a couple of times this week. Very clutch. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your next order. Use that promo code LOCKED15. That's LOCKED15, 15% off over at BuiltBar.com. Talking about favorite hauls and picks tomorrow. Oh, and I bet I might as well say this to you guys now. We are doing Fan Friday at the end of the week, so get your draft questions ready. I'm expecting to break the record. Now that the draft is over, now that we see where guys are, I am expecting to break the Fan Friday record of questions about where guys fit, if you're pissed off because you wish your team drafted this guy and not this guy. Obviously, the crazy off-the-wall ask-me-anything format, it's going to be a wild ride. Until all that, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.